Welcome back to the Red Zone Podcast. I'm Abby Schnabel, men's basketball beat writer for the Wisconsin State Journal, and join with me today is Jim Polzine, columnist and former beat writer. The men's basketball team opened up their season with a 81-58 win to St. Francis. Jim, what do you think about last night's game?
Yeah, number one, it was weird being there, not being the beat writer. I'll tell you that. It was just a little different. But I don't know how much we can draw from that game. That team they played was not very good. St. Francis Brooklyn is, you know, I think if you look at KenPom numbers, they're in the 300s. So probably the type of team that Wisconsin should be playing at this point, as young as they are, right? I mean, I think the football team found that out, that playing really good teams out of the bat is not always a good result. So I think this team, as young as it is, needs some games to kind of build into a much more difficult schedule. And I thought there was a ton of things to like. I don't know what... what stood out to you as far as some things that jumped off?
I really liked that, like you said, experience is a big part of these early games. And Greg Gard played all 15 eligible players. I say 15 because the news did break yesterday that Matthew Moores and Chris Hodges have decided to redshirt this year. But the other 15 all got in. All 12 scholarship players scored at least 2 points, which I thought was good. And I think it was a nice little showing of how deep the bench could be.
Yeah.
I kind of categorized the people off the bench in a couple different like levels, with Chris Vogt, Jacoby Neath, and Lauren Bowman kind of being that first tier in a way. And then you've got, I mean, I think you could put Carter Gilmore maybe a little bit ahead of Jordan Davis and Marcus Silver, just because we saw him in the first half. But the biggest thing off the bat that stood out to me was that the bench could be really deep.
Yeah, and Greg Gard's kind of hinted at that he's like, I don't know what my rotation's going to be. Is it going to be 8, 9, 10, or 11? And for those of us who have been on this program for a long time, they've just never had an 11-player rotation. That just it's almost, you know, it's very rare for them to go beyond 8. You know, sometimes they have a ninth guy that plays occasionally. And maybe that's what it'll settle into in time. I mean, once he kind of feels this roster out over these first couple games and the games start getting harder, and certainly when you get into Big Ten play in early December, maybe it's down to 8 at that point or 9. But I do think he has legitimately 11 guys right now that have a chance. I mean, this is their chance to kind of prove, are they ready? A guy like Marcus Silver, who was the 11th guy last night, is he ready? Carter Gilmore can play a role. I think that's the other thing that stands out. I think Greg Gard's going to have the ability to mix and match depending on the opponent. When you need some shooting, I think Carter Gilmore's one of your best shooters. Maybe he plays one night. When you need to go a little bit bigger, maybe that's when Chris Vogt plays a little bit more minutes. So I think he's got options. I think he's got flexibility with his roster. There's a lot of youth, and we'll see how that translates once the schedule gets more difficult. But, you know, I liked what I saw last night. I think there's a lot of encouraging signs.
I thought it was interesting that Vogt, Neath, and Bowman all played about the same amount of time as Tyler Wahl. I think we all expected heading into the season that Tyler Wahl would be one of the biggest contributors, and just this game and what we saw from the exhibition, again, take it with a grain of salt. It's only 2 matches, but I don't think Tyler Wahl has kind of found that stride yet.
Yeah, and I think he's going to be a guy that logs a lot of minutes no matter what, because he does some of the little things. But yeah, that was one guy that stood out last night as just not having a very good night. And having seen him for 2 seasons, I didn't make very much of it. I think he's going to be just fine. I think he's one of the guys you can count on. But the good news, I think, like we mentioned before, is they have some depth behind him. They have if a guy in the starting lineup is not having a good night, I think they've got options. There's not much of a drop off. We've seen years where there's a pretty big drop off from the starting, you know, 5 and top 2 reserves to whatever comes 8th and 9th. This year, I don't think there is that. So what that's going to lead to is competition in practice. And I think that's one thing that Greg Gard was saying, that he likes how competitive this group is. They get after it. They want to win spots. They want to earn playing time. So I think that bodes well. And now we just, you know, this is one step last night. I think we're going to see some pretty good growth from this team, but there's also going to be growing pains.
Absolutely. And one thing, arguably the biggest thing about last night's game, was Chucky Hepburn, first true freshman since 2001 to get in the starting lineup.
And really the first true freshman point guard for as long as I can remember. I should have done a little bit better research on this. I just don't remember when they had, when Wisconsin had a true freshman point guard. Devin Harris was the last true freshman to start an opener in 2001, but was not the point guard that season. He played point guard the rest of his career. Trevon Davis was the point guard. So it's been a long time, and it's a tough position. But you know, I think the thing that stands out about Chucky is he's a freshman in name. I don't know that he acts like a freshman. And he's got a lot of poise, got a little bit of personality. I like that. Last night he held his pose on a three-point shot. I think that, you know, can tell the guys like him. They like playing with him. When he's in there, the ball moves. He's a true point guard, and they just haven't had that in a while around here. So, yeah, a lot to like about him. I think he's going to be a fan favorite over 4 years. Now there's going to be, like I've said this before, about like I've said before, that Brad Davison would be a fan favorite for 4 years, and already some of the fan base here is tired of him. I just think you can kind of get sick of players after a while. But I don't know. I think Chucky might prove him wrong. I think he's a guy that people are going to like for every minute he plays here.
Like you said, with him not seeming like a freshman, I noticed that as well. He just is very poised, mm-hmm. whereas a lot of freshmen, I think, come in and they've got the jitters. They have the missing footwork, turnovers, all that jazz. And he still had two turnovers. He still had things about his game that weren't the best. But I think the biggest jitters you saw were in his introduction when he tried to walk over to the other coach instead of joining up with his teammates. But I mean, second leading scorer with 13 points, only 2 points behind Jonathan Davis, who led. I think that's a good tell. I mean, yes, we got to scale back with St. Francis. But I mean, your opening game, 13 points, you're starting, and you're creating a lot of opportunities. I think that's one of the biggest things I saw in Chucky Hepburn is that he is so – he's all about that pass. He wants to pass first, always does. But he has a beautiful shot too.
Yeah. That's what stood out last night. He made a couple three-pointers, and I thought – because that's one of my biggest question marks coming into this season with this team is, do they have enough outside shooting? You know, Brad Davison's going to give you that. Johnny Davis, you know, had good three-point percentage last year, but limited opportunities. So I wasn't sure what you're going to get from him. Who else is going to contribute from the perimeter? And so Chucky and Ian Lone Bowman, too, had made a couple three-pointers. So I think that was positive. I think that was encouraging. The thing with Chucky is, like, you can look at assist numbers, and that's not going to tell the entire story. Like I said before, the ball moves when he's in there, and he gets in the right spot. And maybe he's not the guy making the pass that leads to a basket, but there might be some hockey assists with him where he's the guy that makes the pass that leads to the pass. So, I think, like I said, I was very impressed by his poise. And he had the two turnovers back-to-back down the stretch that, you know, kind of soured what was almost a flawless performance. But, you know, those you can learn from those too. And Greg Gard said Hepburn probably got a little bit tired, and that showed.
Greg Gard also said a couple weeks ago that he loves when there's a true point guard on the court. Yeah. It gives people like Jonathan Davis and Brad Davison the opportunity to kind of just like focus on shooting. They don't have to worry about controlling the ball. Obviously, they're both still leaders on the team, and they're going to have a little bit of that. But I think you saw that. Like, Jonathan Davis, I felt like, really got the opportunity to sit and score. I mean, there was that stretch in the second half where he hit – three shots in a row, two of which were three-pointers, and then, you know, missed the last one, which would have been
a heat check, yeah.
Which would have been a lot of fun. But I was impressed with Jonathan Davis. It was his first start, too. I think we all get bogged down by the fact that Chucky's first true freshman, but Jonathan Davis didn't start in a game last year, and he started last night.
Yeah, I was really impressed. I mean, I wrote the column leading into the game on how if this team's going to maximize its potential, if it's going to, you know, be as good as it can be, I think Johnny Davis needs to make the jump. And we've seen players around here make the jump. Jordan Taylor, Frank Kaminsky, John Luehr, those are guys that stand out as having made the developmental jump that you kind of need to have a good team. If you have a good team, you need great players. And I think Johnny has got the highest ceiling on this team. It's too early to say he's made the jump, but there were signs last night to me that he's a much better player than last night. Actually, the thing that stood out to me wasn't his scoring. It was his creating, you know, where he can get downhill and feed his opponents. He fed Brad in the corner for a three-pointer, found Crowell underneath, and he found Ben Carlson for a basket. So five assists, led the team with five assists.
It's his career high, too.
Yeah, and that to me is a guy that, you know, is unselfish, you know, not in it to get himself points, but wants to, you know, create for others. And I had asked him last week about just hey, your teammates are saying you're more aggressive, that you get downhill a lot more. And he's like, yeah, downhill, but it doesn't mean me getting the basket all the time necessarily. I'm going to look for others and create shots for others. So I think that's a little bit what makes him a rarity around here, is that Wisconsin hasn't always had guys that can create for themselves, get downhill, and create for others, and Johnny certainly fits that bill.
I think the biggest stat of his that stood out in my mind was the no turnovers.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we saw in the exhibition, and last year, that he can make those mistakes, but zero turnovers with as much creating as he does in the offense is huge, in my opinion. And, I mean, the team had 12 turnovers over the whole game. Granted, they did put in some of the people towards the end of the bench at the end, and those were a big bulk of the turnovers, but no turnovers from Jonathan Davis.
Yeah, I thought that was really important. And they played faster in the first half. They played faster for the game, but they had 35 possessions in the first half, which is, typically in a typical game, they're somewhere in between 28 to 32, right? So they usually average around 30, 60 for a game. They had 35 in the first half, and a lot of that was they were pushing the ball up court, which is great. I think Greg Gard's always been in favor of, hey, you guys can push the ball, just be smart about it. And so the number that stands out there is they only had 3 turnovers in the first half. So 3 turnovers in 35 possessions is really impressive. So I think this team probably has to play a little faster than past teams because, A, I don't know where the shooting is going to come from necessarily, and B, they're really young inside, and I'm not sure where the post points, the points in the paint are going to come from. So I think they're going to have to get some fast break stuff going, and certainly at least put pressure on the defense to get back. And if you don't let them get set, that can lead to secondary points in transition. So again, that stood out last night. We need to see it against an opponent that is more disciplined, certainly. But I think that was encouraging.
And he also, the team as a whole, 13 transition points, 13 fast break mm-hmm. points. Like you said, they're pushing the court. They're getting those steals. Jonathan Davis and Brad Davison had the most with 2 steals. But each combined for 4, but they created a lot of points on those transition opportunities. So that stood out to me. Something else I wanted to talk about, you tweeted about it, Brad Davison. Do you remember the time?
8:49, I want to say, his first flopping. So all I said, all I put was very factual. Brad Davison gets called for his first flopping warning of the season, 8:49 into the season or whatever that. It was much better written than that. But that thing has just exploded. I got like 2,200, as of this morning, I haven't checked lately, 2,200 likes and like 400 some retweets. It was all from opposing fan bases mostly, like the Minnesota and Iowas of the world. Just kept spreading. It was like wildfire. So yeah, it was very predictable. You probably saw my reaction when it happened. I'm like, yeah, there it is. There's the first one. It got out of the way pretty early.
It made me laugh because as someone who's newer to to Wisconsin sports, I've been told a lot about what Brad Davison is like, and he lived up to what I expected.
It actually might have, I want to go watch it again. Like, I actually thought there was a legitimate chance that he would get a charge there, but he's the guy that's not going to get the benefit of the doubt. He's just not going to get the benefit of the doubt in that situation. So I think Lamont Simpson was the official last night that called it and got that one out of the way, and there are going to be more. Like, there will be more. I don't know what the over-under will be, but there's definitely not going to stop at 1.
I think it was Chucky Hepburn that said it, not last night, but a couple weeks ago. He said, I would not want to be playing against Brad, but I'm glad to have Brad in my corner.
That's a good line.
Fantastic quote. And, Brad Davison is a good player. He's very aggressive, and you see it. And, I'm excited to see him through the rest of the season. One more player I wanted to bring up, just because I feel like in the few times we have seen him has been fairly consistent. Steven Crowell.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I nothing he did last night stood out to me necessarily in the moment. And then I was, kind of working on my little instant analysis as the second half went on, and I was looking at the stats. And at that point, he had like 10 points and 7 rebounds. And I'm like, wow, that's, he's accumulated some numbers here. And that's a good sign. I thought that between him and Chris Volk, it's a pretty solid 1-2 punch. Volk was actually impressive last night just in terms of his rebounding, block shots. He was just very active down low, and they need that. Like, they're certainly going to need that in the Big Ten with going against the likes of Kofi Coburn and Hunter Dickinson, and EJ Liddell's not a traditional center, but he's a big body. Travion Williams at Purdue. There's a lot of good big men in the league again this year, and they need as many bodies. Even if it's Chris Vogt getting three or four fouls, just, you know, saving Stephen Crowell from the grind. Because it's going to be tough on Stephen Crowell being a sophomore, being not quite where he wants to be mature-wise and strength-wise. So they need that 1-2 punch. And then I think they still have the option of playing Ben Carlson at the five at times when they go a little smaller. If they're playing a smaller lineup, I think Carlson can slide over to that five, and that gives them a smaller, more flexible lineup at times. I don't think they're going to use that one a lot, but I think they have the ability to use it.
Crowell and Vogt combined for 17 rebounds. Yeah. I don't remember the total for the team, but 17 rebounds between the two of them is impressive in my mind. And I think something that I've been watching, and I'm writing a story about it on Friday, is at the beginning of the season, or I should say preseason, Big Ten Media Days, Greg Gard said he anticipated there being a three-man rotation, Chris Vogt, Ben Carlson, Stephen Crowell. And I think what I noticed in last night's game is it's really going to be more of a two-man between Vogt and Crowell, and then it seemed like Ben Carlson and Tyler Wall are sharing that four spot. But like you said, there is the opportunity, there is the ability for Ben Carlson to kind of swing into that role, and I think that's what's interesting about the team is all of them can play another position.
Yeah.
And I think that is speaks a lot to their depth. They may not have the deepest bench. They may not be able to go 11 people every single night, but you do have people that can switch up the flow of things. And I think that might work to their benefit, especially like you said, with the Big Ten centers. Like, I think being able to switch in and switch out 3-4 guys down low allows for the opportunity to trap some of their opponents.
Yeah, I mean, Greg Gard, if I've had a dollar for every time Greg Gard has said this, I'd be pretty rich right now. But it's basketball has become a positionless game, and they are, when they're on the recruiting trail, they don't say, hey, we need to go out and get a four. They want guys that can, you know, play four, play five, play three, can guard those positions. That's really the number one thing in recruiting is what positions can this guy guard, and because they switch a lot on screens, and if they find guys that can defend multiple positions, that is a huge, huge bonus. And so I think they have that. Like I said, I don't know how much Carlson's going to play the five, but I think you'll see it at times against smaller lineups. I think Crowell and Vogt are a pretty solid 1-2 punch. I think Crowell's going to be a really good player by the time he leaves here. I don't know that this year he's going to be consistently good, but I think that there's a makings of a really solid, typical Wisconsin big man in there. And then it's up to him and the coaching staff to kind of develop and get that out of them. So, like I said, there's a lot to like about this team. There's going to be rough patches, certainly, but I'm excited to see where this team can be in February and March because I think there's going to be massive growth.
I'm excited for it. It's going to be a fun first season for me covering the team because it is such a new team, but also, like, there's so many, just from this first game, so many pieces to pull out. Switching gears a little bit, UW plays Green Bay on Friday, November 12th, and Bo Ryan will be making his first official appearance since he retired in December of 2015. You chatted with Bo this morning,
didn't
you? Yeah,
I just got out of there. Went over to his condo. He invited me over there, and we talked for close to an hour. And, you know, anybody that's been around Bo Ryan knows that he likes to talk, not necessarily always about himself, but I think he's excited. He kind of downplayed this, you know, getting recognized because it's not about him. It's about kind of the program and all the guys that have helped him get to where he is. So he was very humble about that. But we covered a lot of ground and just what he's doing now. And he said basically his life is the three G's right now. It's golf, grandparent, and giving, which because he's still very active in Coaches versus Cancer, and he and his wife Kelly are you know still very active in charity and giving. So he's staying busy. He looks good. It was fun to talk to him for an hour. I think he's going to appreciate this Friday night. I think the fans who are there are going to appreciate it because there was never a chance to really say goodbye. I go back to that day six years ago. I think it was December 15th of 2015. Nobody really, there was probably 10 people in that building who knew he was retiring. I was not one of them. And, you know, wrote my game. It was an 8 o'clock game. I wrote my game story. 10 o'clock, he rolls into this press conference. And I remember Brian Lucas from Athletic Communications saying, Bo Ryan's going to start off with an opening statement. And to me, I was like, wow, this never happens. This is, we had heard rumors that, you know, he had already said this is going to be his last year. But when it was announced that he was going to have an opening statement, I'm like, he's doing this right now. And suddenly it was like 10:15 at night and you're in breaking news mode. And I'll never forget that night. It was a weird night. And then going back and watching that game and just kind of like watching him on the sidelines, you could kind of tell that, you know, this was the end, and there was kind of a daze there, and it was a crazy time. And so I'm glad he's getting recognized. He deserves it. His legend should not be thrown around just haphazardly, but the man is a legend in terms of what he helped build here and helped sustain.
I think this game, I like that it's this game, and I know it was this game for multiple
reasons. Not coincidence,
reasons.
Right, yeah.
Because he coached UW, and then his son is the head coach at Green Bay. So his son gets to be there. I'm sure all of his family will be there. It's also in the Kohl Center and at UW where he kind of made a name for himself. And the funniest thing of what you said was that he invited you over to his condo.
Yeah, well, so we'd done that before, like when he went to the Hall of Fame a couple of years ago. I set up an interview with him, and I'm like, if we can do this in person, let's do this in person, because I just, you know, one-on-one interviews are so much better in person. So I reached out to him this week and said, hey, can we talk? I heard you're getting recognized. Congratulations. Can we chat? And I think I put something in the text about get together, right? So I thought it was pretty obvious. And then so we worked out a time, and he's like, yeah, just give me a call. I'm like, oh. So I followed up a little while. I'm like, hey, you know, was thinking about more about this. Can we actually get together in person? And I was thinking, like, meet at a coffee shop or whatever. But he's like, yeah, just come on over. And so he's got a really nice place. I'm not going to give away where he lives. A lot of people probably know. But it's a high rise and near west side of Madison. Great view. He's got a great setup there. He gave me the tour today. And he's a collector. So he collects a lot of stuff. There's a lot of basketballs, rings from his time at UW, pins. He keeps every pin. The NCAA tournament, people probably don't know this, but you get a pin from the NCAA tournament. Just kind of coaches walk around. That's who they recognize that they can go in certain places. He kept them all, and it's crazy. So he's kind of showing me off. He's very proud of all his collections.
And then the other thing is you said that they said, oh, he's going to give an opening statement. And you were like, oh, he's doing it right now. Now they do that in all the press conferences.
Well, and everybody does. Everybody did back then, but Bo never did. But it would always go straight to questions. And that was kind of his way of doing things. He didn't feel the need to make an opening statement. And probably some of it was being stubborn and not giving us a chance to know what was on his mind. We had to kind of work for it and ask. But that was the moment I knew. There was a hint before that. Patrick Herb had come around, and Tom Oates was not there. Tom Oates was at the game that night, but didn't stick around for interviews. And Patrick Herb came over to me before Bo got in there and said, is Oates still here? And that was kind of a, looking back, that was kind of a hint that, hey, something big's about to come. But none of us saw this coming. I just remember Patricus and I looking at each other. Once Bo started talking, we looked across the room at each other like, holy crap, this is happening. And it's happening on a really bad deadline. And suddenly the game, what just played out, means nothing. That's the other thing I'm going to get to in this column is that game was ugly. It was not a quintessential Wisconsin game under Bo Ryan. They were sloppy. That team was a mess at that point. It was not a well-played game. And for Bo Ryan to go out with that game, looking back, is kind of unfortunate. But, you know, he coached that night, announced it to us all. The next morning he was on a flight to California for – you know, that's where he spends 6 months of his year. So him and Kelly, his wife, flew out, and he was gone. And it was Greg Gard left to kind of clean up what was really a kind of a messy locker room and a team that had already lost at home to Western Illinois and Marquette and UW-Milwaukee. And, you know, Greg Gard turned that team around and got the job, the full-time job, because of it. Greg Gard's first game, they played GB, UW-GB, coincidentally. That game, I think they had like 26 turnovers. That was not a great start. But then they had some rough patches. They started 1-4. They went 1-4 after that, and really took them till mid-January, late January, to kind of find their footing. And ended up, you know, he got them in another the top four streak in the Big Ten continued. Got them back in the NCAA tournament. Got to the Sweet 16 that year. That was Bronson Koenig's buzzer beater against Xavier in St. Louis. So it was really an incredible run, and that's why, you know, I get people to this day complaining that Greg Gard's the coach. I'm like, well, he earned it. You know, he left Barry Alvarez with zero choice because he turned that team around. Most of it was coming back for the next season, and Gard certainly earned the right to keep going.
And this is why I love that you're on the podcast, because you
institutional
have
knowledge.
You have all of the background knowledge that I don't quite have, because I mean, 2015, I was still in high school.
Wow.
I was still in high school. So like, yeah. Well, okay. UW plays Green Bay at 7 p.m. on November 12th, and then they also play Providence on Monday, November 15th. That'll be their last game before heading to Vegas for the Maui Invitational. We'll have another podcast next week for you, kind of looking at the games that we haven't covered today and then also getting ready for Vegas. So thank you so much for listening. We currently have a subscriber deal, $5 for 5 months. It'll get you through basketball season and hockey season. Yeah. And football season. So it's a solid deal. Thanks for listening.